John McEwen on the Americana Music Show on syndicatednews.net, and I'm sitting with Gary Allen. Anybody in country music that's aware of what's going on will know that name. He's been working really hard at what he does, something he believes in, starting from Southern California. Is that right?
Absolutely, yeah. Got signed out of California.
And why did you... Usually you find with somebody, for me it was Duck Dillon. When I saw him playing, I went nuts. I was 17 and a half.
Right.
What am I going to do? I saw him and I went, I didn't think of anything else. He was going to sue him for ruining my college career, but then I thanked him. What was it for you at what age?
I think for me, I played with my dad and everything. You know, I was in bands and played with him since I was 12. But I think the one that really made me go, wow, I want to do this, was the Highwaymen show. And it was watching like Christofferson and Cash and that whole crew, Waylon and Willie. And I think that's when country music became rock and roll to me.
What age were you?
I was 15.
Yeah, but before playing with your dad, did you just do that because you could?
Yeah. Well, you know, my family always played. And I guess I had some funny moments when I was a kid and, like, watching the church bands and stuff like that of, you know, hell, I could do that. or I could do it better and want to do it. And I think watching my brother and my dad was where most of my drive came from.
What was that moment, though, for you? It was Gary Allen. You wanted to be on stage with them. That was fun. But all of a sudden, there was a point in time where you went, I'm going to be me.
You know, I had played in bars until I was about 22 of that. This is kind of a funny story just about that. I was offered a record contract at 15, and my dad wouldn't co-sign it because my dad said I imitated people. He said, you haven't found yourself. If you do this now, all you're going to do is be molded into whatever they show you. And he used to have this saying, you need to play for the people that love you, the people that hate you, and the people that can care less, and then you'll figure out how to play for yourself.
That's really good advice.
It was. And I quit his band because I figured I wasn't going to get a record contract anyway, and we didn't play together for like 3 years. But it wasn't until I was about 22 playing in bars, and I think one day I just realized that I didn't imitate now. I didn't have to think about how I was going to do a song. I just played the song. And I ended up getting a deal at 25 with Universal. And actually, I finished that record contract with them. It was a 7-album deal, and I just re-signed with them for 3 more albums just a few years ago. And that was way back in 95. It took me damn near 15 years to finish it.
Was the second album harder than the first?
I think so, just because we're successful. So you have the fear of what if it doesn't go again. Hell, I just turned in a record last week, and I still have that. God, I hope somebody likes it. You know,
I was having dinner with Vince Gill a couple of years ago, and both he and Amy were saying. I said, Vince, are you getting any airplay? He goes, well, you know, recurrent and classic, none of the new stuff.
Right.
How is it for Gary Allen at this point in time?
I don't think we have. We're still on fire. Still getting singles. A lot of the album I just turned in is, they're already making plans for when they're going to release it. I hope that I'm still going to play, just like everybody else, whether I have singles or not. But God, I hope to be the one of those acts that can cruise in the background for 20, 30 years.
And so you consider yourself. Your dad said he didn't want you imitating people.
Right.
He wanted to find yourself. You were emulating a bunch of different people, possibly.
Sure.
Their lifestyle.
Absolutely.
Wanting to be on the road playing the guitar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have you become what you were emulating?
I think I'm what I thought I could be when I was like when I decided I wanted to do it at 15. I think we're I think my band and our whole sound revolves around truth and authenticity, and kind of what you get on stage is me. I don't really have a persona for stage. We get out there and do our thing.
Since you were imitating or being inspired by a lot of people,
yeah,
you probably knew some of their background. Like Bob Wills was a tough bandmaster. You probably are aware.
I do. I think my favorites were Haggard and George Jones, all the classics, you know, Buck Owens, and I think they were California people, Buck and Merle.
Are you a tough bandmaster?
I think I'm easy to work for if you do your job really, really good. I think I'm not a babysitter. I don't care what you do. You can drink, smoke, run around. I don't care, but when it comes to that hour and a half on stage, you better play your ass off. mm-hmm. and give it your all. And if you do that, I don't care what you do. I think that's kind of a where I'm at. So I think people enjoy working for me, but it's because I let everybody have the freedom to do what they do. I don't expect, well, this band that I have now, they played on the records, but I don't make them try to play something like some other band did. Like if I recorded with a different band, and Lord knows I've had a lot of bands over 15 years, I always let that band play it the way they would play it and pull the good out of that band instead of making them regurgitate somebody else's licks.
But let's say somebody ran into you in the airport. You're sitting next to somebody on the plane.
Right.
And they're not a country music person. And they may not have given, maybe they haven't even heard of Chris Christopherson, because he was kind of an eclectic
right.
person to know about. And they said, what are you, and well, what do you do? How would you describe that?
Who I'd say, well, we play country music, and it's, I think today country music's a little bit more poppy, and I don't think that, I don't think I play that stuff. I think my stuff is more rock-edged, but I think there's so much country rooted in me, and since I've always played it that way, it'll always sound country. Because I've written with rock guys, and I realize that every time that I sang, it turned into a country song. Just because of the way I sing, yeah.
Do you attribute that to California, or the records you were listening to growing up in California?
All the above. I think it's the mix of, I was heavily into punk rock as a kid, and alternative music, and really hardcore country, and I think there's a mix there. There's a mesh.
I'm sitting with Gary Allen, a quite accomplished country singer that I just found out, sitting on the plane next to him, hearing about him. And I wanted to ask him, well, do people recognize you? Are you one of those singers, T.G. Shepherd? You know, T.G. Shepherd was supposedly at a Warner Brothers conference, and he got asked, who are you, by so many of the people at the Warner, from the label.
Right.
That he left the label. He had 48 number one songs, and nobody recognized him.
Wow.
Do you get recognized?
I definitely get recognized. And I live in Nashville, so I think that I get recognized.
Well, in the hinterland. Sure, in the cylinder inside the
right.
thing, the world of that. Like, it's easy to get recognized backstage.
Right. No, it's not heavy. I don't have people hammering me all the time, but I definitely get recognized. And it's always from somebody that hits me strange. Like, last week I was in Huntington Beach in California, and there was a little surfer kid walking by, and he went, man, I love your music. And it's the people that I never, ever expected to come out of that kind of make you smile and keep walking.
Huntington Beach. We spent so much time there.
Probably the Golden Bear.
Oh, what do you know about?
Oh, yeah. I got a funny Rodney Crowell story real fast. I was just riding with him like 2 weeks ago, and he walked by a band, or walked by one of the garages behind the Golden Bear, and heard a band playing his song, and he thought he'd open the door and go, hey, you know. So we opened it up, the door. It was small town Saturday night, and one of the guys says, close the door, man.
Oh.
I go, what'd you do? He goes, I closed the door. He goes, clearly they didn't hear my version of it, and moved on. That just made me laugh. Golden
He's
Bear.
Talking about Rodney Crowell, who for the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band wrote our first number one song, Long Hard Road, after 17 years. And Rodney wrote things for Bob Seger, and he's one of the nicest guys.
Yes.
And here he is at this club, and they won't let him in to hear the song that he wrote, but they'll play it on stage. Have you heard your music being played by other people?
I have. And that's always, it's always flattering. It's always fun to watch. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's better, sometimes it's ugly.
I always felt I didn't care how it was. It was more important than airplay.
Yeah, amen. Just the people wanted to hear it or wanted to be able to learn it is a big thing, I think.
And you think, gee, what drove them to do that? With Gary Allen here talking about his country music career, if he was sitting with trying to convince somebody to be on The Tonight Show, and he might say, well, I've got this award and that award. What things have you collected?
No, I don't have any awards. We've had a 15-year career so far, and I guess like Willie says, we're just not very award-friendly.
How about recognition for gold and stuff like that?
Absolutely, yeah. I couldn't tell you. I think I've sold over 7 million records.
That's a good number.
It is a good number.
Yeah.
I think we just
it's
keep
an
making.
Exciting number.
Try not to look back. I'm always just feel lucky that I have a job every year.
When you are doing this, do you feel like it's work?
Never. I don't care how late I work in the studio. Like I said, we just finished a record, and it completely consumes me, and I. Yeah. Well, I did it for $30 a night forever. So.
And that was for you and the band.
It was the band, and I actually didn't take a cut.
Well, there's a believer in his music.
Right.
And speaking of his music, what percentage of the music that you record is yours, written by you?
About half.
And where's the other half come from?
Usually friends. I have like a handful of guys that I write with, and in order to write with me, you usually have to come with one of those guys that I've known forever.
Mm-hmm.
And then outside of that, if I hunt with those guys that I write, it's usually things that they wrote without me or with somebody else. But it's a pretty small circle. Even when I take outside songs and you go through them all, I seem to gravitate towards the same people that phrase the way you phrase or think the way you think or whatever it is.
Have you ever studied the craft, or let's say the background, like what happened in the 30s?
No. I got to Nashville and I slopped around in it until I figured it out. That's about it.
Do you know who Don Slitz is?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, Don told me this story about, I got this idea for a song. I got off he's in a plane or whatever. I went right to my office. 20 minutes later, I was done. It wrote itself. You got to know when to hold them, got to know when to fold them, got to know when to walk away, know when to run.
Yeah.
He said after that became a hit, he went back to his office 100 times looking for that 20 minutes.
Right.
And he couldn't do it. It took him 2.5 years to write another hit.
Wow.
Do you ever feel intimidated by your own success?
You know, I don't think so. I don't think I think that way. I think as soon as the record's done, like after I turned it in, I'll probably never listen to that again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just start focusing on writing new stuff until I get excited again. And it usually takes about a year for me to start getting excited about what I'm doing. And I think it's when you accumulate enough new stuff and go, no, I've got hits, or at least I can compete with the writers in town. And then I take all of their stuff, and then I'm pretty honest with myself. I mean, I've had albums where I got 2 cuts and 1 cut. If everybody beats me writing, I try to go with whoever's best.
Again, we're listening to Gary Allen, visiting with him on the Americana Music Show, and he's talking about songwriting. A lot of his songs have been quite successful to the point of selling 7 million records. What percentage of the hits are the ones you wrote?
Ooh, none. None. Almost everything of mine was album cuts, and I usually write sad stuff, and I've been through a lot, so whatever I've been through seems to come out. I've had singles. Actually, one with Jamie Hanna, we had which is Jeff's kid. We actually had She's to California together.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had the single before that, Learning How to Bend. And
so you've got some new turf to conquer.
Yeah. When you say hit, I think top 5. So my records have creeped up into like top 15. I sell a lot of records, but I haven't been one of the ones. It seems like the ones that go top 5 don't really sell a lot of records. The ones, like my biggest selling songs are like Smoke Rings and Right Where I Need to Be, and they peaked out at like 12, but they were songs that would make you go out and buy a record.
One of the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band songs, Dance Little Jean, didn't get past 7.
Yeah.
But it's one of the most, like, we could play a couple of the number one songs and people would go, where's that from?
Right. Same.
You know, but if we don't do Dance Little Jean, we'll be in trouble.
Right.
You know, which is a cool thing because that's just the nature that we don't have time to explain here about why something will or will not go to number one when it might even sell more.
Right.
It's just the nature of the record business animal. But it is a funny thing. Nobody ever says, yeah, I got a top 13 record.
Right, exactly. But percentage of the single, even single, small percentage.
So does your father communicate with you at any level artistically at this point, since he gave a really good piece of advice?
No. No, not at all. I think he just knew that I wasn't ready. That was his biggest piece that he gave to me.
Does he see some of the success?
Yeah, he's passed away now. He's been gone for 2 years, 3 years.
Oh, that's tough.
But he got to see a lot of it, and I think he enjoyed it as much as I did or more.
How cool. And your mother?
She's still alive, doing great. She doesn't play. But she's absolutely the reason I'm here. I can remember when I was first learning, like 12, 13 years old, I was writing songs back then. She would turn everything off in the house and come in and listen to me and cry at the sad ones and laugh at the good ones, and gave me so much confidence to be able to come out and do what I do.
Did she make you play in front of the relatives?
Always. Yeah, didn't we all? Yeah, we all had to perform for the relatives.
At church?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up Mormon. My mom was LDS, and my dad was not, and they were polar opposites. There you go. They still got along. They were married for, God, almost 50 years. But
wow.
My mom was just very non-judgmental, and my dad smoked and drank and played bars with me. I'm pretty sure the reason he made us go to church was so he could be alone in the garage on Sunday.
So you played a few steak centers.
Amen. It was steak dances. I used to have a rockabilly band back then, and that was big.
Oh, my gosh. Do you have a message that you could give to anybody that's young and wanting to do this? I run into them all the time. I usually say, when somebody says, I want to make a CD, you got any advice? I always say, start the artwork.
Right.
So they go, huh?
I always say, get yourself a band and get out there and learn how to play. Find something to say.
So my point about that is you have to be dedicated to make it work.
Yeah.
And that's what I would attribute your success to, just from getting to know you in this small space. You really like what you do.
I do. I do. Very driven. And I really love music, so I would play it no matter what.
So you would play it no matter what, but it's that strange thing of an audience. Is it because of them or for them? Because that's who I work for.
Yeah.
I don't sit around the house playing and going, boy, that's pretty good, play it again.
Right.
I sit around my house and go, I think this lick might motivate people to like it.
It's definitely for that. I definitely don't record. I definitely don't play so I can make records. I definitely make records so that I can play in front of people. That's my rush. That's what I feed off of. I don't know what that's about. I don't know if that's about ego or if you just like to be in front of them, because I don't feel like I've got a big ego. But you definitely want to be playing in the biggest rooms that you can. I think that measures success, so you always shoot for the bigger crowd.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's just a
right.
curiosity.
Yeah.
Like, why are so many depressing people comedians? It's because they can't afford therapy.
Right, there you go.
From what you say, it supports one of my theories is people don't make hit records. Audiences make them hits.
Right.
Because people record and record and record. And
can't get caught up in stuff you can't control.
Yeah, and if something becomes a hit, it takes a few years to learn the fact that it's not like, I wrote a hit. It's more like, oh my God, we fooled them.
Right.
A bunch of people liked it.
One slid through the cracks.
Yeah. Well, you seem to have become what you are emulating to me. You're this guy that is kind of known from California. Don't you think that's a general impression? And Huntington Beach, is that still in your back of your mind?
Yep.
The bonfires down
Absolutely.
In Huntington?
Absolutely. Surfing every day, the whole...
Surfing before school?
Every day.
So what do you miss in Nashville, being in Nashville?
Surfing. I miss the active lifestyle. I mean, when I moved there, all I cared... I know I live on a lake. I just cared about being on water first. Now I wakeboard, but I miss the lifestyle, the active lifestyle. I have to go to a gym now, and I never, ever had to go to a gym when I lived in California.
Mm-hmm.
I was always either surfing or riding bikes, and everything took care of itself. A lot easier to eat healthy out there, too. And I miss the sunshine. You can have an 80-degree day at any time of the year.
That's right. And the weather stays pretty much the same. Do you think your music improved on the Nashville move?
It did. I learned how to ride. I've gotten better at riding. And I'm really good at keeping the whole scene away from me. I kind of live up there in Hendersonville. I don't come to town very much. My record label, they moved, I think, 6 years ago to a new building, and I haven't seen the building. I just don't go down there. And I think the music business, all they're worried about is timetables and taking from you. And it works against you as an artist. So I think the more you can keep them at bay and find the good things that you like about music and keep that sacred and not let people touch it, the longer I can last.
You're really making it work. It's admirable. Because I know many people that try. And sometimes they try with the purpose
right.
of making money. And sometimes they have different visions and they can both be functional. One of the stories that I like about Loggins and Messina is Kenny Loggins and Jimmy Messina were walking back at the hotel after a concert. They both have notepads. And Kenny's going, the stars are out, the fans are great. I'm feeling tired, but I could have done that. And Jimmy's going, 8,000 people?
It's true.
Minus attack.
Sure.
And both of them have been successful. Do you seem to know what's going on behind you to get you to this point?
Definitely.
And you said you want to keep doing this when you're older.
Mm-hmm.
Do you... That's what you want to do. So the question I was going to ask is, what does Gary Allen see himself being or doing at 55 years old or 60?
This. If probably complaining that I'm not getting airplay, but but still playing constantly. I can totally see myself traveling and doing
even
that forever.
Even if you have the money, even if it goes to $20 million.
I do. Maybe you do less shows, but I would still want to play. I love to get together with my band is like some of my best friends, and I love to get together and hang with them. I just saw Willie Nelson at the Symphony, and he was 79. And I thought, man, that's the career I want. I want to still be up there with my guys.
But on the other hand, what's it about John Fogerty, who created Creedence Clearwater, ended up in a situation where he couldn't make records after he left Creedence that sounded like him?
That's
because there was an infringement of style. He could not make records, and then they lost $18 million. It took them 18 years to collect. I think it was 20 and 18. Because he wasn't paying attention to the second word, music business.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that, but it can maybe not need to be done, but something. I think that's what Garten's doing. He wants to know who's spending what and why.
Right. I actually didn't have a manager for my first two singles. I got a record deal, moved to Nashville, and it was the middle of my third single. The head of the label, Bruce Hinton, had come to me and said, you can't do this by yourself very long. You're going to have to trust somebody. And I ended up stealing his head of promotions, which is John Lytle. But I remember approaching John, and then John had to interview everybody that he thought was good. And I just felt like they were all fat cats, and nobody was really going to fight for me. And John was quitting a very big job, and if he didn't make it fly, he was going to feel it. His family was going to feel it. And
well, this is good advice. I don't mean to interrupt, but if somebody's listening because they are a big fan or they're trying to find out how to be successful, why did you need a manager?
Because it just got too big.
But what did the manager do that helped?
Improve what I had. And I used to tell people that before I had a record contract when they'd offer to manage me, because everybody wants to make you a star and do something.
Yeah.
I would say, if you can manage to get me a record contract, we'll talk about what there is to manage. Right now, there's nothing to manage.
Mm-hmm.
I got
it. So now that you have the perspective of something to manage, is it coordination?
It's coordination, and he has to be told of your time on the road, coordination of your time, your access to people, to interviews. Everything has to go through him. So me and him talk about philosophies on things like that, and then he enforces them is basically it. And he's been one of my best friends. I've been real fortunate that way.
How long has he managed you?
15 years.
Wow, that's admirable. What does Gary Allen have coming up new?
I just turned in a record, so...
On what label?
On Universal, which is my second of my re-up for the three.
Mm-hmm.
And the label heads just changed. We just got Luke Lewis out and Mike Dungan in, and Luke Lewis didn't do very well for me, so I was excited to see him go. And Mike Dungan is... he seems to be way excited about what we're doing, and I think
he's one of the nicest record men. You know, he was president of the Capitol, and that's where I've been for 90% of the good stuff.
Nice.
And Mike's a good anyway. He's good. Good thing. So, you got a new album, and there's a website, I'm sure.
GaryAllen.com. Absolutely, you can
spell it for me.
GaryAllen.com. Go check that out. And I don't think we're even, I mean, I just turned it into the label, so I don't even think I've got teasers on my site, but there might be some YouTube clips of me doing the stuff that, you know, that we've just written.
We've been visiting with Gary Allen on the Americana Music Show, and some wonderful insights into his background and stuff like that. Boy, this guy of mine is good. Is there anything that you missed in some interviews that you wanted to, oh darn, I forgot to mention this, or I think people should know about this, or
I don't think so. I think I've done so many interviews and turned over every stone of my life, but I think it's all out there.
What's your favorite movie? Is there one? This is kind of a silly interview question, but just curious.
Probably like Pulp Fiction. I really like quirky, odd Quentin Tarantino, that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh. I was just curious about that one. Okay, thank you.
No worries. I'm glad we could do this.
Me too.
This is Gary Allen on syndicatednews.net.